A lot of, what he's saying about, public employees actually being these greedy incompetents who, are running criminal organizations. How is that different from a Goebbels in the 30s and 40s saying, the Jews lost us World War I? The question is whether a guy like Bannon, whose rhetoric is extremely violent, who is closely associated with people who have an extremely violent vision of the world, is Bannon going to be the one raising the brown shirt mobs?
Since the election of Donald Trump, a major feud has erupted within his own ranks, and it's between the tech bros and the nationalist right within the MAGA movement. Dubbed the MAGA Civil War, the battle pits former White House strategist Steve Bannon against tech billionaire Elon Musk. And to break it all down, we're speaking to Rick Perlstein, a leading historian of the conservative movement in America, and the author of a four-volume series on its rise, including Reaganland and Nixonland. And he joins us now from Chicago, Rick Perlstein. Thank you so much for taking the time to be on Real Talk.
Glad to be here.
Rick, I want to, kind of start off this conversation. We're going to be talking about Musk, we're going to be talking about Bannon, we're going to be talking about the so-called civil war within the MAGA movement. But, you're a leading voice on American conservatism. You've spoken before about how there's been a certain viciousness within the conservative Republican coalition in the past. I mean, looking at where we are today with Trump's return and, the power that the MAGA movement holds over the Republican Party, how do you see this through the lens of America's conservative history?
Well, I mean, you could write a book.
It's a loaded question.
Yes. I mean, history in the simplest level is the study of continuity and change. And the MAGA movement is a perfect case study because there's a lot of continuity and there's a lot of change, right? But, the continuity really goes back to the founding of the American Republic and the idea of whiteness, basically.
Whiteness,
yes. People who are descended from a certain segment of Europeans, are the people who own the country. And the rest of us, and you and I would be in the other category, are just visiting. And the apotheosis of that obviously was, the establishment of chattel slavery for descendants of Africans. And, the conquest of the lands of the Native Americans, the Indians, right? So that's the biggest continuity in American history. And one way of plotting the entirety of American history is the attempt to liberate, us from that entailment and turn America into a true multiracial democracy. And there's always been movements of reaction against that. I mean, in the 1920s in the United States, the Ku Klux Klan had millions of members. Controlled lots of state governments. And in 1924, after decades of very open immigration, in which there were, a million immigrants coming in a year, just shut down immigration on various racist terms. The Ku Klux Klan was built on this theory that the Catholic Church, Europeans who came from the wrong part of Europe basically were like invaders, right? Much as Trump talks about people coming from Mexico as invaders. And that movement of, fighting the establishment of a multiracial democracy is one of the biggest plot points in American history, right? The discontinuity in Trump is that he, brought in, first of all, a bunch of people who were too extreme for even, that strain of conservatism, right? Really wasn't kind of part of the crowd of, kind of the official conservative movement. So in a lot of ways, he kind of exercised a hostile takeover of, the movement I wrote about, but a lot of the themes, a lot of the ideas were, incredibly consistent. The idea that, governing in the public interest and building a state that could kind of, this is another one of the big continuities that could protect ordinary people from, the ravages of the marketplace, right? Mm-hmm. Of big corporations, right? That was always a big part of conservatism. And, he kind of talked about that in a different way that was much more adjacent to the way the right talked about those issues in Europe, right? So he kind of sounded a lot more like the fascist tradition. So this is kind of complicated stuff. But again, the bottom line is some of what he is saying sounds a lot different from what Ronald Reagan sounded like. But a lot of it, and especially as we're kind of watching him, you know, dismantle the capacities of the state piece by piece, is exactly what Reagan had in mind.
And, you know, before we get into the MAGA movement, I guess your view of Elon Musk and the influence or the role that he really has inside the Republican Party today.
Well, I mean, that was, you know, I mean, so when we, you know, first arranged and scheduled this interview, you know, we were going to talk about, yeah, the civil war between these tech billionaires in Silicon Valley, yeah, you know, led by Elon Musk, and the followers of this strange fellow who kind of much more resembles kind of a traditional fascist position. This guy is Steve Bannon. And we're talking today at a time when Elon Musk has, you know, been given by Trump, but also kind of seized almost dictatorial power to decide the fate of every part of the federal government. He did that by taking over the payment system of the government.
Doge.
Yeah, this terrifyingly authoritarian move by, yes, this organization he calls Doge, which has, this is very important, absolutely no legal foundation, right? It's just completely outside of the law. It's entirely lawless, right? It's as lawless as if I walk down the street and smash you in the face, right? So in many ways, you know, no one's talking about Steve Bannon anymore. He's lost, right? You know, like a lot of vanquished political factions, you know, he leaves behind his ideas that get adapted by the faction that won. I mean, just because you know, no one is talking about Stephen Bannon, one thing to say is that, you know, the kind of vicious, vociferous hatred of immigrants is still part of the movement. So that hasn't gone away. That hasn't lost, right? But you just, you know, see it in what Elon Musk is doing too. You know, for example, you know, one of the things, if you listen to Steve Bannon's show, The War Room, you know, over the past years.
Which you got invited on, didn't you, at one point? But you rejected that invitation.
I did, yeah. So if you listen to his show, you know, a lot of the propaganda will talk about organizations that are subverting the United States by doing things like giving starving immigrants food, right? Like helping people who are literally walking across, you know, South America and Mexico in order to escape the most terrifying oppression, you know, giving them water, you know, helping them out. And these are organizations like, you know, Catholic aid organizations. And when Elon Musk says something like the Lutheran Church is a money laundering organization, you know, that's what he's talking about. He's talking about the fact that, like, you know, denominations of the Lutheran Church in America are charities that get money from the federal government to help administer services for refugee seekers, right? So it doesn't matter if, you know, you stamp Stephen Bannon's name on this policy and this idea of that Elon Musk is, you know, exercising or not. This is still a huge part of the MAGA movement.
When you're saying something like Steve Bannon is lost right now, I mean, how are you seeing the role today of people like Bannon, of people like Stephen Miller, and their influence over Trump?
Well, I'm sure he's still, you know, doing his show every day. And, you know, Steve Bannon basically is a propagandist and a broadcaster. And he has a show that, you know, millions of people listen to every day. And so, you know, a big part of the influence he has and always has will just be kind of telling stories about the world that will direct the hatred of, you know, all these kind of followers that he has. As far as the influence he has over Trump, I think that he had influence in a way that kind of directed Trump's policy ideas, but that influence was probably in the past, simply because for whatever reason, might have been, the aggressive actions of Elon Musk, or maybe it was just because Donald Trump, because he's such a shallow, and narcissistic person, really loves the idea of working alongside the richest person in human history. Musk is the guy. Musk, this guy is, kind of won this. And, Elon Musk, I mean, Steve Bannon, he talks about Elon Musk. He has talked about Elon Musk as, the enemy, as this, terrible person who must be destroyed. I imagine that, like a lot of fascists, he'll just kind of turn it a dime and kind of make his accommodation with Elon Musk.
You think so?
It's a funny time having the conversation because I don't recall, hearing the name Steve Bannon in the news, for a good week now.
And yet, before that, he was basically, it was his quotes that were being
He was the
shared
guy.
everywhere. Yeah.
He was the guy. Yeah. And I'm sure he'll be fine. He'll still continue, ripping off his listeners and selling them, worthless, kind of nutritional supplements. And he's a person who has, remarkable charisma. He's a pretty capable institution builder. And none of this could have happened without him, but now it can happen without him. It can continue without him. Like a lot of builders, he's a prophet without honor, I guess you might say.
So, do you see the, this what's been called the MAGA Civil War, which kind of erupted in public over the H-1B visa
Right.
debate?
It's funny. We haven't really heard about that. And so H-1B visa thing, should I explain that?
Go ahead. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. So here we have this movement that is based on, just absolute eliminationist hatred of immigrants, right? And generally speaking, the face, of an immigrant in this movement is someone from Mexico or someone from South America, especially Venezuela, right? Where, a lot of often because of US policies, things have been going really bad and people go to America because it's this metropole that, has a strong economy. And another important form of immigration in America is, highly educated professionals who, let's just say, as a kind of a case study, come from a place like India. Where they get a really good computer science degree. They know how to be computer engineers. And they'll get a job in, say, Silicon Valley, right? As a computer engineer at one of these big companies. And like a lot of migrants, they'll send a lot of their salary back home, right? And maybe they'll live in an apartment with other people in their situation. They're not necessarily trying to establish a life here in America. They're just trying to make some money, right? So this is the important thing. They're a lot cheaper, right? And for a lot of these Silicon Valley companies, they represent not only cheap labor, but easily controlled and pliant labor. Because the way the enabling visa for this kind of work works, the H-1B, is it's connected to your employer. So you only get to stay in the country and send back money and support your family and, begin to build your career so long as you don't piss off your boss, right? So that's almost a form of indentured servitude. And so what the, tech billionaire segment of the MAGA movement said was, oh, well, you don't mean these immigrants, do you? And to which, the people around Steve Bannon said, well, of course we do. And interestingly, a lot of Steve Bannon's listeners are probably people with computer science degrees who can't get jobs because they need to support a family in the United States, right? So I think because Donald Trump was maybe kind of caught sleeping, or maybe he, didn't care, or whatever was the reason, there was this very vociferous public spat between people around Bannon who said these H-1B visas are just as destructive to, the health of our republic as, the kind of poor huddled masses, kind of crossing the Rio Grande on the southern border of the United States. And then the people around Musk who need these, visas in order to, exploit their employees. And Donald Trump maybe could have paid lip service to what Bannon said, and then kind of gone under the table to the Silicon Valley guys and said, well, don't worry, I'll take care of you down the road when this thing blows over. But he didn't. He didn't manage the crisis. And it kind of, for, you know, maybe like two or three news cycles, became something that was very dramatic. I, you know, read the New York Times and Washington Post every day. I haven't seen anything about the H-1B issue come up. You know, maybe they made some kind of accommodation. Who knows what's happening now? The thing that's important about this, and why this is, you know, more represents more than just maybe some, you know, kind of little controversy that came and went, is it just shows how hard it is as citizens and as commentators and observers to kind of make sense of what matters in this chaotic situation, right? So this is something all of us were talking about 2 weeks ago, and we're not talking about now, but you don't know which of the things are going to matter, right? Of these kind of like chaotic situations they throw and, you know, kind of throw out there and see which ones will stick. And there's going to be a million things at any given moment. You can't pay attention to them all. And some of them may turn out to be huge, and some of them may turn out to be nothing. And maybe this H-1B thing will turn out to be huge. Maybe this is the contradiction that will, you know, bring down the coalition. But so far, it seems to have had no consequences whatsoever.
Right. And the question that I was going to ask was whether, even if it's not directly related to the H-1B, I mean, did it show a certain fracture within the MAGA movement, you know, between the populists or the nationalists, right, let's say, and the tech bros on the other side? I mean, is this something that's going to just keep pushing either side away as we move forward?
Well, I mean, so you know, a political movement, you know, out of power, and a political movement in power, you know, it's a very different thing. So now that, you know, the MAGA movement, you know, has, you know, been inaugurated, right? So you have its representative in the White House, but not just that, right? Because this is not a normal presidency, right? The MAGA movement also represents the systematic attempt to just rip all the systems and institutions that are in place to check the power of a dictator, right? So now the MAGA movement is just a dictator, you know, and whatever that dictator wants, right? And so he doesn't really necessarily have to, you know, hold much of a coalition together because he has all the power, right? And since, you know, it's not also, it's not kind of a normal political movement in which you necessarily have to deliver favors to one part of your coalition. And, you know, that's always the challenge of a leader, right? Because you might have to take something away from another part of your coalition, right? The movement is, because it's a fascist movement and because it operates on, you know, what in German, unfortunately, sometimes you can only use German words for this stuff, was called Führerprinzip, the leader principle. All power comes from the leader, you know. A lot of people who might, you know, what we do get in the news are people who look to be, say, profoundly hurt by Trump's tariffs, saying, I'm really confused by this, but I'm just going to trust he knows what he's doing because I love Trump, right? So people will always just kind of advert to their worship of the leader, right? I mean, there's kind of like a image in history of, it's 1945, you know, the Allies are kind of, you know, Allies are, you know, about to kind of win World War II. They're about to enter Berlin, which has been bombed to smithereens, and a German is standing in the rubble saying, how have we failed our Führer? I'm so ashamed, right? So you see what I'm saying, right? You would think that if a leader and the promises he makes to you are broken and he screws you, well, that makes, you know, should make, in a normal political system, the political leader vulnerable. But in a fascist system, which is built on this kind of cult of personality and kind of plays at people's, you know, kind of deepest, you know, most kind of infantile longings and fears, that might not happen. That's what's so scary.
Yeah, and that's what I would want to ask you, is that how do you even interpret, or how do you define the movement? What's the uniting factor that they have other than Trump?
Well, no uniting factor other than Trump. I mean, there's lots of things that contributed to him succeeding, right? And him winning all that loyalty, right? Like I say, that traditional hatred of, kind of non-white people, or, the kind of, very undignified actions by non-white people saying, no, we're with you. We're not like those other non-white people over there, right? Because obviously there's non-white members of the MAGA movement as well. There's the pleasure that comes from hate, right? There's the, kind of infantile pleasure that comes from having answers to every question, right? And there's the fact that in a movement like this, if you do not go along with it, you might put yourself at risk because, in the ultimate case, because of a fear of violence, but just, the basic routines of kind of domination. Like you might want to go along with, I mean, this is where kind of the history of, mid-century Europe is much more relevant than anything that's ever happened in the history of the United States, right? I mean, I'm always telling people to watch this, seven series season show about a town under French under Nazi occupation, a French village, right? Where every kind of bureaucrat in the town has to decide whether or not to, follow dictates that under normal circumstances would be illegal or immoral, because if they don't follow those dictates, they might lose their contract with the government or say something like that.
And when Bannon says something like, Trump is a moderate in our movement, and this is a direct quote, Trump is a moderate in our movement, and I think the MAGA movement is shifting day by day further right. How does that
But
strike you?
scary too. I mean, I think that a huge question in evaluating what happens next is whether people will be willing to, commit, lawless violence on the part of this agenda, right? So, just to give you an example, here I am in the city of Chicago, right? And like many cities in America, because we have this very broken immigration system because Republicans have refused to, for 20 years now, refused to pass laws saying this is how many people should be allowed in the country, this is how many people shouldn't be allowed in the country. They just kind of let the existing, laws that like do not, deal with the reality that this many people are going to come to the country because there's jobs for them, right? So cities like mine, will legally declare themselves what they call sanctuary cities. They're like, we have thousands and thousands of people who come from Mexico who are technically illegal, they're undocumented, but they're just, just normal parts of our community. Some of them have been here for decades and decades. Some of them have children and even grandchildren. They own businesses, right? They work in businesses, right? And they say, we're not going to let the federal government come in and deport these people. We're not going to cooperate with the federal government, right? And for that reason, took power. The first place they went was Chicago to try to institute a mass deportation of undocumented immigrants that they said had committed crimes, right? And they ran up against such strong resistance from the city, from activists, from the migrants themselves who, were told that they didn't have to open their door without a judge's order and that sort of thing. That
Right.
the guy in charge of this guy named Homan, they left far short of their goals, right? So the question is, will people who are in the MAGA movement who say, Trump is a moderate, he sent the police, we're gonna, we're just gonna like, we're just gonna, try and accomplish what he couldn't accomplish through mob violence, right? That's kind of what I hear when Steve Bannon says, Trump is a moderate, we're more extreme than him. So, the question is whether a guy like Bannon, whose rhetoric is extremely violent, who is closely associated with people who, have an extremely violent vision of the world, is Bannon going to be the one kind of raising the brown shirt mobs? You know, are they the ones who are going to do the Kristallnacht, you know, and start kind of expropriating Mexican businesses and things like that?
Do you think it would get that far?
Why not? I mean, do you think America is like somehow, you know, some, you know, kind of is exempt from the laws of history? You know,
no, not at all. I'm asking.
And not laws. I don't think history has laws, but I mean, yeah. I mean, people have been fed poison and continue to be fed poison in their media about, you know, mothers and children as quote unquote invaders who are, you know, destroying the country. You know, you guys have all heard it, right? I mean, yeah. All you need to do is, you know, go on any right wing podcast. So, you know, people are going to take that seriously. You know, of course, it'll get that far. It's been, you know, 2.5 weeks, right? And Trump is going to be frustrated. And, you know, and the fact that, you know, people in America and people who are in this movement, you know, worship guns and worship violence. And that's part of their culture. I mean, it would be very strange if we were spared that kind of cataclysm. I mean, you know, Steve Bannon is a guy who, you know, one of his businesses, you know, he's kind of a, you know, a lot of these guys are con men. One of, you know, what, by the way, he's, you know, under investigation for soliciting massive amounts of information, money from his followers to quote unquote build a wall that never got built, right? So he's kind of like under criminal indictment for that. One of his businesses is he sells kind of indoor, kind of laser-based kind of rifle ranges where you can learn to kind of shoot and refine your shooting of machine guns.
But is there anything that surprises you? You know, you're saying it's been 2.5 weeks, but is there an element of surprise here about these deep ideological fractures coming up to the surface, considering how the movement was successful in winning the presidency, the Senate, and the House?
I was surprised by the H-1B thing when it happened, because I think a competent and alert politician could have kind of shut it down, right? So I was surprised at kind of how poorly it was handled. I think that I'm not surprised that these ideological differences have so far been successfully tamped down, right? Again, because of this kind of unifying factor that, you know, all parts of this movement, and you see this in Elon Musk's rhetoric as much as, you know, Steve Bannon's. And when I'm referring to Elon Musk, you know, talking about, you know, kind of, you know, the Lutherans as a, talking about, you know, the US aid organization, you know, the kind of the part of the government that passes out foreign aid is a quote unquote criminal organization, right? So that level of kind of hatred and demonization, you know, has a very powerful uniting force, right? As long as, you know, the people we're fighting are pure evil and we're pure good and we're going to redeem, you know, the universe from this pollution, you know, you can forgive a lot of details. And that's where the money is. You know, it's going to be, you know, also, you know, you got to realize that, you know, what Elon Musk's, you know, young people who are, you know, kind of burrowing in his agencies are doing is, you know, giving themselves access to, you know, massive amounts of money. I mean, one of the huge things about Elon Musk is, you know, he's a massive government contractor. So he's kind of empowering himself to write himself checks, you know. So if you want to get on the right side of that, maybe you're going to shut up, you know. Maybe Steve Bannon gets, you know, some kind of concession, you know, that lets him, you know, kind of, you know, get his, you know, wet his beak as the Godfather, you know, as it goes in the Godfather. But I'm just, you know, I'm just kind of riffing out here. I have no idea.
Yeah. Is there a historical precedent for someone like Elon Musk, you know, in American politics?
For Elon Musk. Yeah. Elon Musk. Yeah, I wonder. I mean, I don't know, King Leopold of the Congo. I don't know. Maybe Henry Ford, but Henry Ford never got close to political power in this way. No, I think he's pretty much an unprecedented figure. I mean,
Yeah.
the guy
Also,
who's,
his influence in communication as well.
I mean, yeah, and that's the other thing. I mean, Elon Musk, this is a little one of these little kind of illustrative details. So there's a so we had this, terrible airline crash, right? Basically, the first, in a few, kind of like, right around the time of the inauguration. And the National Transportation Safety Board. So first of all, the guy who was in charge of the safety agency was one of the first people fired because Elon Musk was mad at him for making sure that his rockets were safe, didn't explode on the launch pad. So I mean that's the kind of corruption we're talking about. And when the National Transportation Safety Board started, the new regime started sending out information, they did it in tweets. And so we're not going to send out press release. We're gonna respond, through our X account. So what you have is this communication platform owned by Elon Musk functioning as like state media, right? And the other thing is, Elon Musk has like 50 million followers, but you don't even have to be his follower. I'm not. When I go on X, the first thing I see is some tweet from Elon Musk, saying that the agency that hands out, aid to starving people in Africa is a criminal organization, right?
The
So I realized
algorithm's
that.
gonna push it anyway.
They'll push it anyway. So basically, like, anything Elon Musk says, will be seen by more people in a day than everything I write in my entire lifetime. So, I mean, the idea that, you have this guy controlling this crucial channel information, controlling the payments the government makes, setting up this whole, entire ideology that the Silicon Valley geniuses have the answers to everything, and that everyone who works for the government is a lazy and stupid, incompetent, right? Yeah, absolutely unprecedented.
You know, one of the conversations that have been going around about Musk lately is whether he's a true Republican or is he more of a cynic or is he actually a MAGA Republican? But are these do these questions even matter to you? Do you feel like these are the right
Oh, they
questions to be asking?
I mean, I think that these are not the right questions to be asking. Just, it's interesting. I had a weekly column all through 2024, and trying to figure out kind of what's happening and come up with theories. And, I'm kind of glad that I'm not writing a weekly column because I don't really think that that's, the important work right now. It's just kind of figuring out theories about what's happening. Just pointing to what's happening is the important work, right? It's history is great, but right now we just kind of like, have to basically sluice the important, kind of vectors of resistance to where they need to go,
In August 24, you had a tweet that said, "If American democracy falls, Elon Musk may come to share as much responsibility as Trump." Now,
which was that's pretty prophetic. I don't I mean, that sounded, that must have sounded a
that
little
was
bit
a year
nuts then.
ago,
Yeah, I think I was talking
6 months ago.
Twitter then. Yeah. I
Yeah, and
mean,
that's what I was going to ask you.
no one would, I mean, I've literally heard a American senator say that, Elon Musk is just methodically destroying American democracy. I heard him this morning. So, I mean, I didn't see him as becoming kind of like the, kind of the dictator of the federal government, but that's what he's trying to be, And I mean, you probably follow the news. You know, a lot of the people who are carrying out this putsch on his behalf, some of them don't have college degrees. A lot of them are in their early 20s. Their only qualification is, computer coding skill and their loyalty to Elon Musk and, by extension, to Donald Trump. I mean, the real question is, what will be how well Elon Musk handles Trump. I mean, it's still going to be Trump's signature that's required to do the real stuff. So I have, kind of no idea what that's like. But there was one quote from Donald Trump when he took down, I think it was USAID. that he asked Trump, "Are you sure you want me to do this?" And Trump's like, "Yeah, I'm sure." So he's kind of like, signaling that, he's acting, him and Trump at this point are acting, in concert.
And how do you see him using, X and his wealth and his influence to shape the political landscape, not just in the US, but we've also seen him attempting to kind of
Right.
meddle in European affairs. We saw it in the UK where he was falsely accusing Keir Starmer of failing to prosecute the grooming gangs. And
Right.
then in Germany where he endorsed the far right AfD party in the elections, the upcoming
Right.
elections that they have this month. So again, just the implications of that.
Yeah, and the important thing is to understand is in this case, this is something he's kind of built up over years. He also, like Trump, has this cult-like following to whom he kind of defines reality. So he can just make up the most fantastical things, right? The Starmer thing, right? Just make them up, right? And like Joseph Goebbels did. I mean, if you think about it, a lot of what he's saying about public employees actually being these greedy incompetents who are running criminal organizations. I mean, how is that different from a Goebbels in the 30s and 40s saying the Jews lost us World War I, and they're responsible for everything bad that's happening in Germany, right? A lot of its influence comes in defining reality. That's to me the most terrifying, most fascist part of the MAGA reality of all is just the invention of reality stuff. That like when we had these cataclysmic fires in California a couple weeks ago, that you just had, I would just get into arguments with people on social media who just absolutely believe made up things about why these fires happened. They didn't happen because of global warming. They happened because of environmental policies designed to preserve the life of this 2-inch-long fish, right? Completely fantastical. The idea that somehow Donald Trump sent the army and turned on the spigot, because the liberal, evildoers had somehow cut off water to Los Angeles. Just sheer propaganda. And to me, that's the most frightening because it really kind of takes away the lev one of the most profound levers that the forces of decency have, which is just the truth and reality. When the dictator can make his followers say 2 + 2 = 5, anything is possible.
I'm going to ask you a few historical questions too, but before I get to that, I mean, you're talking about how Steve Bannon has fallen off the news cycle lately. But what about the nationalist right, the followers of Bannon? Like, where are they in all of this?
I have no idea. My hunch is that they have nowhere to go because so much of this is based on kind of worshiping power, and Trump is the power, right? So it's not like they can kind of form this alternate kind of they can't find another dictator to follow. I think that they'll figure out a way to rationalize it and go along. And that's also the scary thing about fascism is, that was one of the things that, was the most powerful, part of, George Orwell's novel 1984, was that from one day to the next, the population would say, East Asia is at war with Eurasia, and then would be told to say East Asia is at peace with Eurasia. And I think that we'll probably see some sort of accommodation made like that. And people will be like, "What are you talking about? I never thought that Elon Musk was terrible." Elon Musk is the leader's, I mean, it's kind of hard to get your mind around if we didn't have the actual precedent of history that, this happened. I mean, like, just to we've been beaten up on the fascists. I mean, you know from history that literally from one day to the next, communists all over the world were talking about how evil Hitler was, and then, the Soviet Union and the foreign minister Ribbentrop signed a peace deal, right? And suddenly communists weren't allowed to criticize fascists. And then Germany invaded Russia and the fascists were bad again, you know? That was what Orwell was writing about.
Now, taking a step back, Rick, where does MAGA even come from? I mean, I know that Reagan used the slogan in the 80s. And is that where it stems from? Does it stem from him kind of aligning himself with the most reactionary elements of the Republican Party at the time? I think it was called the New Right.
Right. So this is, yeah, you can kind of come up with different theories. There's no easy answers for this one either. The actual phrase "Make America Great Again," yeah, it was, something that was picked up by Reagan in 1980, and maybe, Donald Trump heard it, because that was kind of like, the formation of, he was kind of a young man in his, 30s or 40s then. The concept, "Make America Great Again," is the basic fascist concept. Right. Even though Reagan wasn't a fascist, it's a very much a sort of deeply seated right-wing idea.
Even back then, it was a racist, a fascist element, even back in the 80s.
No, I think what I'm going to say is, it's a basic right-wing idea that somehow there's this idealized past, right? That America was great, Germany was great. It's something that all right-wing movements share, right? That there's this kind of imagined past, not really rooted in any kind of like historical study or anything like that. It's almost like, this return to the bucolic feelings of childhood, right? And the leader promises to restore that. It can be anything as innocent as, kind of nostalgia for the 50s when I was growing up, right? Or it can be this, very malign vision that terrible people infiltrated the government, right? So the slogan itself, it's just kind of, it's a kind of a no-brainer. It's kind of like better jobs for better wages, right? It's just kind of like it's a cliche, right? The actual movement himself around Trump, that's, that's a really interesting and complicated historical question, right? We've always had an American far right, but we've also had lots of kind of institutionalists in the Republican Party who realized that the far right were useful people to have around on election day, but you had to kind of keep them in line. So I guess the history of Trump's movement is the history of the lowering of that firewall that used to kind of be a big part of the people around Reagan's job. Was to be basically to kind of keep the rabble angry and voting for Reagan, but not really give them any real power, right? So now, kind of like the angriest, most violent, most fearsome, most kind of unhinged part of this coalition that have always been part of the coalition get closer and closer to the center of power.
And do you feel like Trump is more of a continuation of that? And I'm talking about the Republican rhetoric since the 80s, or is he more of a break from it?
I mean, that's a really hard question. You can kind of argue it on either side.
Yeah. But
But,
there is a reason why I'm asking that. It's because, you often hear people say that Trump is more of a product of the political circumstances. He's not a cause. And is that something that you would tend to agree or disagree with?
well, Trump himself has always been like this. I mean, this is a guy who, his literal first, kind of act as an adult. Was he was him and his father were sued by the Department of Justice for not letting black people rent apartments, in the buildings
Yes.
they owned.
Yeah.
And his first kind of, emergence on the scene, kind of making a political argument, was a full page ad that he took out in every newspaper in New York, arguing that these 14, five teenagers who were arrested for a rape in Central Park should get the death penalty. It turned out they were innocent, and he still claims that they're guilty, right? So he's always been, had these kind of, but also, I mean, it's complicated by the fact that New York is a city run by Democrats, so he was a Democrat, so he could kind of, get in good with the politicians. But I mean, there are some fascinating continuities. His mentor, was this guy named Roy Cohn,
Yes.
right? And
The lawyer.
Roy Cohn was a lawyer, and Roy Cohn was just basically this attack dog who said, "You never admitted a mistake. You always attack your enemies. You always accuse them of the thing you're accusing him of." Roy Cohn was Joseph McCarthy's kind of right-hand man, right? The guy who in the 1950s accused, lots of people of being communists and ruined their lives. So
Right,
he was
McCarthyism.
McCarthyism. So McCarthy was the most important far-right politician in America in the post-war era in a lot of ways. So Donald Trump has this direct, kind of tie and connection to him, right? But he was always kind of at a distance from kind of the official conservative movement. So it's a really, I mean, it's not an easy thing to entangle in any kind of way.
And my last question, Rick, before I let you go, do you think the movement has a potential to what live Trump, to outlive him? So where does the movement go after Trump?
Yeah, I'm not very good at predictions,
You were on Twitter.
Yeah, that was weird. That was an accident, man. I meant something totally different. I mean, that's the biggest open question. It's like if Donald Trump had suddenly been assassinated and there was this kind of battle, because there are a lot of people who have tried to kind of assume his mantle, like the governor of Florida, Ron DeSantis, and no one seems to have what Trump has. Either it's the brazenness or the charisma or the something. So he'll do, so much damage. It could be that no one will ever want to ever be associated with him. I mean, it's like with Hoover, J like with Herbert Hoover, when the Depression happened. And for generations, the Democrats would just say they're like Hoover, and that would, they'd win the election. So yeah, I'm gonna be agnostic on that one.
All right, and we'll leave it on that note then. Rick Perlstein, thank you so much for coming on Real Talk. I appreciate you taking the time.
Bye.